Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWIT.
Bandwidth for the podcast version of Trey's Variety Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Trey. Thanks for joining us for another little Variety Hour. Today is true variety for me because I am a kind of diehard Nikon guy. But everyone's talking about this new Canon, and all the Canon people are all, you know how they are. They're kind of like vegetarians. You know how vegetarians, you know, if you have like an annoying vegetarian kind of militant friend, they somehow work vegetarianism into every conversation. You know, they just find a way to shoehorn in, you know, leather or just something about it. That's how my Canon friends are. So I'm going to let them run wild during this show. We have an excellent assortment of hobbits here. Let's go around and say hello to people. Let them introduce themselves and plug whatever they like. Let me go to the number one plugger here, Gordon Lang.
It's Plug Central here. Thanks for having me as always, Trey. My name's Gordon Lang. I run a website called CameraLabs.com where I review digital cameras. The one I'm testing right now is the new Panasonic ZS20, or as we call it everywhere else in the world, the TZ30. That's a 20 times optical zoom in a point and shoot compact that thick. So this is a pretty exciting little camera, built in GPS and even mapping in this latest generation. And I've done a big preview on the 5D Mark III, and I'm looking forward to talking to you all about it tonight.
Hey, show us your outside. We'll give you an extra long.
Yeah. It's I'm British, but I'm based in New Zealand, and it's 3 p.m. in New Zealand at the moment. And this is the view in Queenstown at the moment where I live. This is the Remarkables mountain range behind me.
Wow.
Gorgeous.
And this is... We're kind of pretty remote here. This is pretty much the middle of nowhere, but a very pretty middle of nowhere. Is it what?
You have Wi-Fi there?
Yeah. Well, this is where I live. This is my home Wi-Fi we're on.
Wow. Yeah, his head acts as an extra attenuator, so he gets like bonus range everywhere.
That's right.
All right.
5G.
Hey, Thomas Hawk, what's up with you?
Hey, Trey, what's up? I'm Thomas Hawk. You can find me at thomashawk.com, Thomas Hawk at Google+, at Twitter, at Flickr, everywhere. I do a show on Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock with the lovely Lotus Carroll called Photo Talk Plus. We're going to have a real-life attorney on this week.
Oh, my God.
Legal issues. A real-life photography attorney, so...
All right. Why aren't you down here in Austin for South by Southwest? We miss you down here.
I'm not allowed to come back to Austin after that incident.
That's all right. We still talk about that here. Let's say hi to Nicole S. Young.
Hey, Trey.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Nicole, I also go by Nicole Z. It's Nicole with an S-Y tagged at the end of it. I blog over at NicoleZblog.com. Of course, I'm on Google+ quite a bit, and I also write books. I have three print books out with PeachBit. And an ebook out with Craft and Vision, and I have two more ebooks in the works. One of them is going to be with Trey, so with his beautiful Flatbooks company over there. So,
thank you, Nicole. Thank you. We're excited about that.
Yeah.
Good final plug there. hey, Fred, what's up with you? Over. Fred. Broadcast Frederick. Professional, Frederick Van Johnson. Now we'll introduce himself. Over.
Oh, thank you. God. You broke up just as you were introducing me. So I was like, is he talking to me or is he not talking? I'm Frederick Van Johnson. I am the host of a podcast called This Week in Photo, also known as TWIP. We have a lot of fun with that thing. It's a weekly podcast, and usually two or three folks that like photography talking about whatever happened that week in photography, hence the name. And I also started a new company, speaking of plugs, called Media Bytes. It's the marketing school for photographers. So photographers that are looking for ways to get the word out about their product, service, work, etc., come to my site and check it out. It's at MediaBytes.com.
Okay, cool. Is the whole thing officially launched now? You haven't told me much about it.
Yeah, I know. You know what? A little anecdote about MediaBytes. Trey helped me conceptualize that company, and you came up with the tagline for the company, Trey. So thank you for that.
Wait, what was it? Must have been good. I don't remember it anymore. What's the tagline?
The Marketing School for Photographers.
Yeah, well, that's not that great of a tagline, frankly.
I think love it's that just, tagline.
I think it's sort of obvious. I'll come up with something better. It might be too late.
Trey, I think I could come up with something better.
Well, hey, I don't know.
Business cards are already printed, Trey. It's too late.
Hey, Scott, what's going on with you?
Hey, not much. I'm Scott Kublin and kind of feel like a peon now because I don't have a show and I don't have a book. Oh. I've got a website, hdrphotographyblog.com, but I'm mostly a hobbyist. Got into photography about 3 years ago and fell in love with it and have tried to gobble up as much as I can. Over the last 3 years, I've done some travel around the world, sometimes with Trey, and helped him with a couple of projects. And we're working on another project right now, which Trey thinks is probably never going to launch, but it is close to launching. And my last name's Kublin, K-U-B-L-I-N. It's pronounced Kublin.
Thank you, Scott. All right, Mel, last time you were on, Mel, you're nervous. Your dad told you not to throw up and
no drinking.
Yeah. And how are you tonight? Do you feel, you feel good?
I feel great. That was the first hangout I'd ever done. So it was incredibly nerve wracking there too. So I've done them since. That helps, but still, it's still nerve wracking.
Are these your drawings here to the right of you?
My daughter.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Where it's my art. Our joint art studio that I'm in. So we share the space. But cool. Yes, I am Mel Piper. You can find me on Google Plus. I don't have a ton of plug. I am excited. I am on St. Patrick's Day. I am curating this huge group or this thing I'm calling my I'm Lucky to Have Met You Because Day. And what I'm asking photographers to do is to think of somebody that they've met who's inspired them and to shoot for them, shoot something for them, anything. And on March 17th to dedicate it to them with the tag I'm lucky to have met you because. So if you want more info about it, just go to my page. I have lots on there about it.
Okay. Yeah, that's about it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Nice. You can drink tonight, Mel, if you want.
No, I have my coffee. I'm good. I get too nervous. So.
Don't listen to that.
Well, she said that was her. Didn't she say that was her joint room?
My in a joint room that's over there ways.
And also I wanted to thank Dave for helping me put this together, our producer of the show. Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome.
And also thank you for doing that live. We did a live photo walk from South by Southwest, and we had Gino Barassa. He did a lot of play-by-play commentary. It was pretty hilarious at times. And Dave and Keith Barrett, if you want to see what the photo walk was like, I have a link in my stream. It's not the best video quality, but you kind of get the sense of what it was like. It's pretty fun. So thank you for that, Dave.
No problem. It was a good time.
And also thank you, Tony Wang at Twit Studios.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. And anybody that's watching on Google Plus or wherever you happen to be watching the stream, jump into the chat there on the Twit page. I'm in there and I watch it and keep up with it. If you have questions and this kind of stuff, we'll be watching. Okay. So tonight what we'll do is we'll talk about the new Canon 5D. Everyone has opinions and ideas. People will share some of their favorite Canon photos from times past in this Canon Love Fest. And then we'll end the show by talking about a few photographer discoveries we've all made in Google Plus and maybe show some of their work and say a few things about them. That's always a nice high note to end the show on just in case everything goes to hell here. Okay, so let's start with Gordon because he really looks into the innards of all these cameras and writes really extensive previews and reviews. And so Gordon, tell us like what's so hot and amazing about this camera. What are the big things that everybody should know?
Well, I think to really understand the Mark III, you've got to look at what the Mark II was or wasn't. For me, the Mark III is the camera the Mark II always should have been. And I think a lot of people who bought a 5D Mark I or a Mark II were a little bit surprised to find out exactly what they weren't getting. They were actually spending almost all of their money on a big full-frame sensor. It was all about the image quality, often at the cost of other things like the autofocus system, the metering, continuous shooting, the viewfinder, the build quality. All of these aspects were actually, well, typically entry to mid-level in specification, but yet this was a semi-pro body price. And I know a lot of people who have come unstuck when a little bit of rain or a splash from the ocean has just glanced the side. No, I'm not talking about a Tom Anderson or a Trey Ratcliffe dunk here. I'm talking about a little glancing blow of moisture and find that it's actually really given it a bit of damage. And they're going, hey, how come my 2.5 grand camera, you know, didn't survive that? So what Canon have done is taken those criticisms on board and basically kind of improved all of the things that people complained about on the Mark II. So most notably, it's gone up from this ridiculously poor 9-point AF system to a 61-point AF system. This is the same sensor that's used in the EOS 1DX. So, you know, that's pretty impressive that they didn't downgrade it or anything. That's 41 cross-type sensors. I mean, that's huge. They've increased the continuous shooting speed to 6 frames per second. Yeah, so it's not, you know, not a kind of proper sports camera, but you can do some reasonable action shots with it. The viewfinder is now 100%. So, Thomas, when you're framing with that lovely 8 to 15 mil fisheye and you've got that full circle, it's no longer cropped in the viewfinder. You will actually see that full circle. And the list kind of goes on. But the one thing it doesn't have, I think the one really revealing thing about where they're going with it, is that there's no big standout headline feature, which is difficult for marketeers and people who tweet and people who sell these things in shops. If you have to describe this camera in one sentence, what's the standout feature? The resolution is increased by 1 megapixel. The movie mode is pretty much the same as before. It's hard to say that the build quality is superior. I mean, how can you describe that it's a bit better than it was before? So they've kind of, there's nothing to really hang it off, which is, there's no specification to really hang it off. And that's the kind of discussion I wanted to have with you guys, is whether that's important or not. I mean, for educated photographers and enthusiasts, it shouldn't matter. Who cares if it doesn't have a headline feature? But it does certainly make things a lot easier to sell. So that was the first really revealing thing. And the other revealing difference about it is that you're not getting all of these extra features for nothing. It would be nice to say that the 3.5 years between the Mark II and the Mark III has seen all of those improvements absorbed into the price, because it hasn't. Today, a 5D Mark II will cost you about $2,200. A 5D Mark III is retailing at $3,500. That's 50% more. This is a significantly more expensive camera. Interestingly, I linked to an article on my Google Plus stream that somebody had actually countered that argument and said, hey, actually, in terms of yen price, it's pretty much the same. It's just a little bit more due to inflation. But because the US and the UK, European currencies are stuffed, the actual perceived value of the perceived cost of this thing is much higher. So that's why it seems so much more expensive. So they're the two main things: no headline feature, and considerably more expensive for most of us who will be thinking of buying it. Scott's occupying the hole on my screen at the moment, so I'm going to say one of the other major features that is going to interest a lot of the people in this panel is that Canon has finally, thank God, broken the 3-frame auto-exposure bracketing limit and has put 7-frame bracketing on this camera at last. Hallelujah.
Yeah, that was something that I had been looking forward to, and I guess most people don't know that I did some type of a comparison with the Nikon D3X. I rented that and went to Vermont and did some foliage shots because I had talked to Gordon about upgrading my camera, and the main reason I wanted to upgrade it was because I was limited with the bracketing. So I rented the D3X, which I could do like 11 shots, which it sounds really cool when you do it. But when you actually take the results of that and post-process it, I mean, there was a slight advantage, but there wasn't, you know, what was that, like a $3,000 or $4,000 difference maybe in price to get that feature. So I kind of, after that experiment, the bracketing or the number of bracketed shots wasn't as important to me, but it is something that I am looking forward to.
Hey, Gordon, what are the stop increments on that, on the 5D3?
What do you mean, the actual increments on the bracketing?
Yeah, exactly.
I believe it's 1 EV. Okay. When you're doing 5 or 7 frames. One of the interesting things that's worth pointing out is that if you're considering a 5D Mark III simply because it's got 5 and 7 frame bracketing, do bear in mind that you could buy one of those USB cable releases, those intervalometer type devices that are only a couple of $100, and they're only, but still a lot cheaper than an extra grand for a Mark III, and they will let you bracket as many shots as you want and do timer shots, and they're little convenient things that plug into the USB port. I know quite a few HDR Canon enthusiasts who use those devices. So that's an option. Just before, I wanted to just mention one last thing, which is a lot of you might be thinking, why did Canon increase the sensor resolution by 1 megapixel? What was that about? Are they insulting us? You know, is that it's gone from 12 to 21 point something in 3.5 years. 3.5 years later, it goes up by 1 megapixel. Now, on the one hand, it's good that Canon isn't going into a megapixel race, if you like, with Nikon. It's interesting Nikon have gone for 36 on the D800. That's their headline feature. That's how you sell that camera. It's good that Canon are saying, hey, look, you know, we're going to have decent ISO performance here. We're going to go for a small number. But why increase it by one? Why not keep it the same? And the reason for that is when you look at video. Now, when you want to do HD video, full HD video, you've got to generate a frame that's 1920 pixels wide. Now, the sensors on these cameras are like 5,000, 6,000 pixels wide. So you've got to do something with all those spare pixels. You can either stick them together to make them into a super sensitive pixel. You can throw them away. There's all manner of ways you can do this, this downscaling. And that's why you sometimes get funny artifacts that a lot of movie people complain about on these video equipped DSLRs. They go, hey, you've got this really shallow depth of field, but as soon as you point it over any grills or fine lines, the quality looks horrendous. And that's down to the scaling. Well, what Canon have done is they've actually, if you look at the horizontal width of the center of the sensor, it's, I think, 5760 pixels wide, which is exactly divisible by 1920 three times. So the scaling is very easy for video. Whereas on the 5D Mark II, you know, the scaling factor was 2.896 or something like that. There's no way you're going to get a good result with that. But when it's exactly three times, that's easy. You just stick three pixels together or take one pixel and throw two of them away. It's a very easy. And that's why they're saying, hey, we can reduce moiré and other artifacts. And that's the reason they've done it. And it's interesting that Nikon, even though they have gone up to 36 megapixels, that's not divisible evenly by 1920. You'd need to go up to, I think, about 39 megapixels for that to be divided by four. So that's the reason. That's the explanation to why they chose to increase the resolution to that strange 22 megapixel figure.
Hey, Nicole, are you going to get one of these things?
Yeah, I am. I'm planning on getting one as pretty much as soon as they're out. It's I just recently last year bought a 5D Mark II, and it was a used 5D Mark II. Works fine. But I've had the 7D for so long. I switched from Nikon to Canon in 2009 as soon as just right as that the Canon 7D was released. It was kind of my time to, you know, move over. I used someone's 5D Mark II, really got a good feel for the ergonomics and the, you know, the buttons and dials and everything. I just really liked it. So, but the 7D it's a lot of little things for me, which is what makes me happy about the 5D Mark III. You know, Gordon covered so much about some amazing, you know, topics. I learned some things actually when he was talking, but the little things on the new 5D Mark III that I like are basically things that they've taken from the 7D, little things like an electronic level. I do a lot of landscape for my own personal work, and it drives me crazy that I don't have a level on that thing, because I don't usually use little bubble levels on my tripod. So just being able to turn that on and, you know, actually seeing how level my landscape is, usually I'm pretty close, but it's nice to actually have that confirmation, especially if I want to do time lapse. For example, which I do with my 60D a lot, and that thing has an electronic level on it. I will say that the two card slots, the CF plus the SD, that's a huge, huge deal. I think there are a lot of people that are going to be really happy with that. And that's not something that you can, you don't have that on anything. As far as I know, the only cameras that are up in the 1D series that go up to two card slots, or maybe there's just one other camera series that has that. So that's really great for those of us who don't want to spend $6,000 on a camera just to have an extra card slot.
What is it about the card slot that you like? Is it the fact that it's just an extra one, or is it because it's SD?
Well, it's because it's an extra one. I'm okay with it being an SD card. I actually would prefer it to be an SD card, because you add a CF slot on there, you're going to bulk up the camera even bigger. And I don't think people really are going to want that. You know, they don't want, they, you know, you don't want a camera to be huge and heavy and bulky. It's bulky enough as it is. So it's nice that it's an SD. SD cards are a lot cheaper. I mean, I prefer CF cards for my main photos because I lose SD cards so easily compared to CF cards. But it's probably going to, for me, I'm probably going to get either a 32 or a 64 gig card. It's going to be in there and it's probably going to stay in there and it's going to be my backup. Every time I do a shoot, especially if I'm going on a trip where I'm going to, you know, cycle through more than one 16 gig CF card, and but I can still retain all of my backup photos on that SD card. So then if something were to happen, I lose a card, I lose a hard drive, whatever, I still have those recent photos on my camera, which, you know, thankfully nothing, I've never had anything happen like that. But for people who photograph weddings or any client work, that's when it's going to be really important. Most of the stuff I do is personal or it's stock. So if I lose a shoot, I lose the shoot. Nobody else loses it but me, which still really sucks. But if you're shooting for someone else and they're relying on you to have photos at the end of the day, then it's a really, really nice backup.
So Nicole,
Nicole, it's the first. Sorry, Scott, go for.
I was just to say, she went from the 7D, or she went from the 5D, and then you said you upgraded to the 7D.
No, I went. Here's my cycle of cameras. I was shooting Nikon before, and right before I bought the 7D, I had a Nikon D200. So I went from the Nikon D200 to a Canon 7D, and then I about a year and a half later, maybe not even that long, I ended up getting a 60D. Mostly because I wrote a book on it. So Peachbit, you know, I had to have a camera to write the book. So I bought the 60D for the book. And then last...
You wrote the book like, on the 1D something.
What's that?
I like this. There's still 1D. Some journalistic integrity there. You've got to have the product to write about.
Well, you do. And ironically, I actually have my 7D in a box sitting next to me. I'm selling it. So it's going to go to UPS tomorrow. And I'm going to say goodbye to my Canon 7D, which is kind of sad.
You did the same thing that I did. My first one was the 7D. And then I just... upgraded to the 5D2 about 2.5-3 months ago. I bought it used as well.
Okay. Yeah, because I got mine almost exactly a year ago. I got my Mark II.
And that thing about the level that you said, that's something big for me too. I never realized how much I used that, but I had to get one of those bubble levels for the 5D because I was so used to having that feature.
Yeah.
So that's something else that I'm looking
at. Kind of becomes a crutch. You're like, you realize, oh, it's not on this camera. So then you have to like just make sure everything looks good. Because, you know, if you have a straight horizon, it's one thing, you know, with like a nice grassy field in the background. But when you have mountains or cityscape.
I had to buy something because I missed it.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, that's something I'm looking forward to as well.
But it's an interesting path to go from a 7D to a 5D2, which is a more expensive camera, and then think, oh, apart from the bigger sensor, you know, it's not as good a camera. The build quality isn't as good. The viewfinder is not as good. The AF isn't as good. Continuous shooting isn't as good. There's all those little features. So what they've done is really taken a 7D, put a full-frame sensor in it, and added a couple of extra new things. So, you know, it's going to please a lot of people. But arguably, it's the camera they should have brought out 3.5 years ago.
I didn't know the build quality was as bad as you were saying. I thought it was much better than the 7D. And when I was in Yellowstone a couple of weeks with my 5D, I was just swaying it around in the snow thinking, ha, ha, ha. And, you know, nothing happened to it, but I guess it could have. I thought it was just a pro body that was more weather sealed than the 7D.
And that, you know, I will have to say that the Canon 7D is a beautiful camera. And I'm only, I guess, moving on from it because the majority of what I shoot, I want a full frame camera. So I'm going to have my 5D Mark II, which will be my backup. And then I'll have a Mark III, which is going to be my main body.
Yeah. One of the other nice things the Mark III has that isn't on the 7D or the Mark II is that it's got a slightly wider aspect ratio screen. It's a 3x2 shaped screen. The same screen you'll find on the 550D and the 600D, so the T2i and the T3i. I can't remember, Nicole, if it's on the 60D or not. But they did a wider screen, a 3x2 shaped screen, that so the images actually fill it, so there's no black bars, so you kind of optimize the resolution. And they've slightly increased the size of it as well, so the images are going to look great on that.
Well,
and it's just a little thing.
The 60D is articulating, so I'm guessing it probably isn't going to be as big. I mean, I don't really know off the top of my head, but it's, yeah.
I wish they added that.
So will any of you miss the fact that they didn't put an articulated screen on it?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I really, really like the articulating screen for some types of photography. And I use my 60D for time lapse, which is, you know, basically just setting up like a landscape. So I like it because I'm actually testing out a time lapse dolly, and I usually am going to want to set that thing on the ground. So if I'm really low to the ground, I don't have to get on my knees and basically, you know, hide behind my camera and try and see it. I can just pop that screen out and angle it up. I think that if they added an articulating screen to the 5D Mark III, there's going to be a lot of uproar with people, you know, because it kind of equates to not as professional. I think people see it that way. Same with, like, if they added a pop-up flash to it, like on the 7D. And it also...
Yeah, but a D800's got
buttons
a pop-up
on the
flash.
Back, too. I'm sorry?
A D800's got a pop-up flash. So, nothing else. Yeah, one of the killer features over the 5D line.
Yeah, I don't think it would be a bad thing. I probably wouldn't use it unless it were to trigger other, you know, a trigger for other flashes and stuff, which I still don't really do very much of anyways. But I don't know. It would be interesting, actually, to see if they would make one with an... I would buy it if they... I would like it if it had an articulating screen. I would be curious what they would have to sacrifice, especially in terms of the, you know, the design in the back of the camera, because the 60D has a very different design. You don't have the buttons on the left side like you do in all the other cameras.
Hey, Gordon, that makes me think of something else that I've seen people selling before. Would something called like a right angle finder, would that suffice to use? Is that something that would...
What, an actual, an old optical one?
I think
so. Because they used to do, I mean, if you're a sadder like me and used to, I still do, look through all these camera catalogs or all the accessories. When I was a kid, one of the most interesting accessories was a little right angle finder that would clip over the viewfinder, but it was just a mirror. So you could look at it vertically. So yeah, I think they still do those. And I think you could, yeah. And you could do that with the screen as well. But I hear from a lot, I like articulated screens. And every time I say that and have a go at camera for not having it, all the kind of pros have a go at me and say, oh, you know, we don't want articulated screens. They'll fall off straight away. You know, it'll last for 3 seconds. I think, what are you doing with your camera? I mean, obviously if you're Trey or Tom Anderson, it'll fall off straight away, but you know, come on. Who here has ever broken an articulated screen? And that includes all you on the chat. Has anyone ever seen one? I've never seen one broken.
Oh, I don't know.
Obviously, if you're holding onto the screen, the body's quite heavy. It might bend a little bit. So maybe that could be.
They get in the way.
Oh, you don't have to have it out.
You have it.
It also protects the, you know, I always have that thing folded in when I put it in my camera bag or anywhere. You can, like, be a little bit more rough with it or put it in somewhere where you're not worried about it getting scratched because you turn it over. So it's nice. I mean, it's a love hate thing. You know, you're either going to love it or you're going to hate it.
Yeah. I don't like it. Hey, you know, I am getting a 5D Mark III though. I've got two orders in right now, one with B&H and one with Adorama. So we'll see who ships first.
The race. The race.
See, I don't know. I was pretty disappointed with how long it took me to get my 5D Mark II when those came out.
Give you a picture line phone number there.
2 months after it came out, and I still couldn't get it. But
aren't you like special Canon service or whatever, where you're like a pro level and you get it early?
Yes.
Is that not right?
Well, Canon, I think Canon hates me, but no, I shouldn't say that. But I'm CPS Platinum, which is like their highest level thing. They sent us an email to the CPS Platinum members saying that it's going to ship next month, which I thought was odd because I'd heard in a lot of press releases that it was supposed to ship March 22nd. So, you know, I don't know. I'm already kind of griping that I have a feeling that I'm going to end up getting my camera next September by the time they actually get them out there. It kind of bothers me that Canon's not more forthcoming with, okay, yeah, you can expect one now or when or whatever.
Right. It's not exactly like working with Apple, is it?
No. I mean, you want the new iPad? There it is. You go, you buy it. Yeah. It's there. You know, with this thing, it's like, you know, okay, maybe it's out, and then by the time 80,000 people have it, they might finally get around to selling one.
Well, do you think it could have anything to do with the 1DX being not being shipped until April, right?
Yeah.
So maybe they don't want people that were going to buy 1DX to go, well, I can get a 5D3 a lot sooner, so I'll just buy two of those instead of one or the other one.
Yeah, I just wish there was more visibility. I mean, I wish if it was like, okay, if you order one on the first day that they're announced within the first hour at Adorama, I had pre-orders in at Adorama and B&H, you know, B&H as soon as it came out. I mean, day one, hour one. And yet still, you know, it's not going to surprise me if I have to wait 4 months to get it. So I think Canon, you know, it's better to know when it's coming. You know, might we get it March 30th, April 14th, when? So I don't like that part about it, but... And it's too much. It's too expensive of a camera. The reason why I'm getting it is the 61-point autofocus, I think, is going to be helpful on the autofocusing system. I've never been entirely happy with the autofocus system on the 5D Mark II. And so I think that some of the lenses in particular do a real poor job at autofocus. I think the 50 f1.2 and some of the other lenses have a hard time. The 85 hunts a lot. So you know, maybe that'll help. And the ISO, the high ISO stuff is nice. Did you guys see that article on Engadget today where they actually had picture samples with the high ISO?
They're beta samples, though, aren't they, Thomas?
How high do
they? I'm not
sure. Pre-production.
I don't know what they are, but they said it was from, they were samples from a 5D Mark III. Yeah, it probably is. It's probably not the actual final release, but the pre-production camera. But, you know, it looked, you know, I don't know. I looked at it, and I was reasonably satisfied. I mean, you know, you could tell a difference, you know, if you went really, really close up. But, you know, at 25,600 ISO, it looked to be a pretty clean image to me. And so, you know, now they were shot, the images that Engadget showed, it was a daytime image, and I'd be more interested in a nighttime image. But, you know, I think for the higher ISO, for the 61-point autofocus, I could care less about the dual card slot, although I could see where that'd be real important to wedding shooters and people. You know, if you're taking pictures of the Bay Bridge, who cares? You know, if you lose your photo, you come back and take it the next day. If you're taking pictures of somebody's wedding, that's a really nice thing to have. So, but for me, it's not, I'm not a wedding shooter, so that's not as important. You know, 1 megapixel's, you know, a little bit better, I suppose. But really for me is the high ISO shooting, which, you know, I'm constantly going to 6400 right now with the camera now, and I'm kind of disappointed with the noise that I see on the Mark II at 6400. So if I can go to 25,600, and, you know, that's sort of what it can do native, and then it can expand out to 102,800. You know, I think I can get, you know, I'll be pretty happy with that. I'd be pretty happy to be able to shoot in low light and get some stuff and, you know, it's shoot it in the dark, shoot it at night.
Mel, do you do a lot of low light stuff?
I don't. I don't do a lot of low light stuff. So the higher ISO, but that's
so you don't
huge
care about that?
No, I don't care as much about that. That's a really huge jump though from what was it, the Mark D2 that had, or that.
The 5D was 6400 natively. Yeah, this is 25,600.
Yeah. So, that's huge.
Personally, my two biggest disappointments with it, and one, I don't know if there's anything they can do about it, but you know, sensor dust has been a huge problem on the 5D Mark II. It is just awful. I think they put a special magnet on the sensor to like attract the dust. It's like it's a dust attracting. And also, I hate it that Canon, you know, claims to have anti-dust technology, which is like the biggest line of BS I've ever heard, you know, because it doesn't do anything. And so, you know, I don't know what they can do. Maybe nothing. Maybe it's all just my fault for switching lenses every 8 minutes. But, you know, I wish they could do something about the dust on the sensor. And, you know, I've taken it now to with the CPS Platinum thing. They give you 5 free cleanings a year, and I just, you know, have to send it into Canon every 3 months. I've tried cleaning it myself. I've tried the Arctic Butterfly brush, sensor swabs, all kinds of things, and there's just nothing like, you know, there's just nothing like having Canon do it themselves. So I send mine in, but so sensor dust is a huge problem. And then, you know, I've always been critical. You know, why can they put GPS in a iPhone? And they can't put GPS in my camera, in one of these big old bulky DSLRs. And I know it's a metal body and all that, but it just is ludicrous to me. I want that camera to auto geotag my pictures if I want to turn it on. And instead, I got to buy some adapter and plug it in. So I don't know.
They don't make it easy. Even if you have to buy something, they don't seem to make it easy.
No, I mean, if I could afford it, I'd totally switch to Hasselblad.
Well, Thomas, that doesn't have a built-in GPS.
I know. But you know, it's a Hasselblad, Gordon.
It's a bigger sensor, too, so it might take longer to clean.
Yeah, that trumps everything. It doesn't have an anti-aliasing filter either. I mean, is that an interesting thing that Nikon have not only got the headline feature of 36 megapixels, but they also have two versions of the D800. Love the anti-aliasing filter, get this one. Don't like it, get the D800D instead. You know, they're doing some really innovative stuff there, whereas Canon's just kind of incrementally updated a few things, made sure the video isn't got as bad artifacts. Frederick, you're a Nikon man, aren't you?
I am. You know, Gordon, I'm happy you said that, because if I had said that, I would have started a flame war because I love Nikon. You know, everything, I'm listening here grinning. I mean, we were talking about the virtual horizon, and Trey, you know, our cameras have had the virtual horizon. And
yeah, dual I had virtual horizon before these guys were born.
I know.
You got a little crank on
it, you know? It's like, you know, Yeah. I mean, all this stuff has been here. I mean, and it's, you know, not to do the Nikon versus Canon cliche thing, but I think it's, we're getting to a point now where at least things are becoming even. So maybe that argument is over. So I think that's good. But I'll tell you, all this camera stuff aside, the thing that excited me the most about all these announcements that came out last week was the flashes, the Canon speed lights, the 600, what is this, 600 EXRT, right? So it has a radio transmitter built into it. That's the biggest thing that excited me that no one else has. It's just like blows the socks off of what people can do now with strobe. So that is that's exciting, you know, and that definitely trumps Nikon.
You know, I have a gripe with one thing that Canon has not added to any of their cameras that I'm aware of, and it's adding an intervalometer. Nikon has it in every camera that I've seen. Nikon has it, and it's just
Since 1902, Nicole.
Exactly. No, it's software. It doesn't seem. I mean, obviously, I don't understand the innards of the Mark III or the Canon cameras or Nikon cameras, but it shouldn't be that complicated. And it's almost like they're trying to withhold it so people spend $250 or however much the extra intervalometer cable release costs when you can buy the same thing from China for like $20. So there's my gripe. There's my rant.
Yeah.
I like time.
Right. And you know, the other thing that Nikon have had for ages, I mean, like Frederick, you were saying it's nice that Canon got this new radio flash, although I believe the range isn't as great as, say, using a Pocket Wizard or something like that. But Nikon, this
right,
DA800
like 350 build, feet or something.
Yeah, so the DA800's like the D700 before, it's got a pop-up flash, so you can use that as a wireless commander, whereas if you want to do wireless flash with the 5D, you've got to buy something to put on it. And the dual card slot things we're talking about, yeah, it's exciting. Nicole was saying she wasn't sure whether there were any other models that were cheaper that had it. Well, in Canon's range, it's the cheapest one with dual card slots, but the Nikon D7000, which is a mid-range camera, has got it. And the D300S had it ages ago. And so, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things where they're playing catch up. And Nikon, you know, has had a lot of these technologies for a long time.
Gordon, why won't they put GPS?
You know what? The thing that gets me is that I mean, all this technology that we have in these camera bodies, and we're talking, like Nicole's talking about, oh, I wish I had an intervalometer in there. It's just software. When are we going to get to the point where you can install software on these supercomputers that we're carrying around?
You can use Magic Lantern.
That's a hack. You know,
true, but it works. But you know, why should we have to go around and do things? That's a simple thing. You know, I have Magic Lantern for my 60D, so I can do time lapse without using anything external because I broke my last $20 intervalometer by dropping it in water. So I need, you know, I was like, it's going to be a lot safer for me to use something that's just on my card. But there are so many other things that it does, and I don't do anything else. At the moment, I don't really play around with the other features. So Gordon's just showing
his. I want a Nikon and a Canon app store. You know, how come we can't have an app store for Nikon, Canon, Sony, Olympus?
They should be open source. We've talked about this on Furious Hangouts, haven't they? It should be open source. You should be able to put Android on it or something, or Linux or something
I think
that.
It's because these Japanese companies, they don't think like a lot of Western companies. And actually, I don't even think it was, if you look at the last 10 years, the idea of apps is really only kind of it's a pretty new thing. It's only in the last 2 or 3 years that the idea of apps has even come out. So, you know, traditionally we do lead the way in some of these innovative kind of business thinkings in the West in a lot of these ways. And the Japanese are also very innovative. They have these big Japanese companies have not really signed on to this line of thought. You know, it is a giving up of control. It is, you know, it's not this sort of a house system anymore that's fully dominated by this top-down design type thing. So I don't know if any of them will ever come around to it. Even Sony, Nikon, or whichever one of these guys is the first to do it, there's going to be a massive explosion. And I bet that a lot of early adopters who do lead the market in so many ways now will all shift allegiances to whoever does it first.
I predict Sony.
I can see totally. Olympus,
I mean,
doing
I'll,
it. You know?
I'll be the first one to put all my gear. Yeah, I'll put all my gear on eBay tomorrow if Canon came out with a new body that allowed me to install like purpose-built apps to do certain things. I mean, that would take me away.
It'd be nice to shoot DNG.
Yeah. I agree. I convert everything to DNG. Yeah, it's just nice to have everything in one compact file instead of having the XMP file on the side. So
it seems like a lot of these things that consumers want, and Canon's just like, yeah, who cares what you want, you know? You'll buy the camera anyways. You'll buy
it. Well, you did buy the camera anyway, Thomas. You're terrible. You're a terrible example for this. What message are you send? What message are you sending to them?
I know. I like the abuse is what I'm saying. Yes, sir.
Yeah, you love it.
Masochist.
In answer to your question about GPS and wireless, I mean, you already know what the answer is. The official answer is that wireless RF has a problem getting through metal bodies. And if you've got a semi-pro body that's got a metal shell, and in the case of the 5D series, there's no plastic top to it for the pop-up flash. So there's no easy way for that radio to get in and out. That is the official excuse. There's another excuse concerning Wi-Fi, which doesn't make any sense, as you'll realize in just a second, which is they say, oh, well, there's all these different global standards and regions, rather, sorry, channels, you know, that the channels in the UK is slightly different to the channels in the US. Well, they're not that different. It's just that some countries have got a couple more than another, and that doesn't, again, stop them putting it in other devices. So that's a bit of a con cop-out for me, that excuse. But they do say the metal body thing is the main reason. So hopefully, you know, when they do a Rebel T4i or a camera like that, the next plastic body ones or the next 60D, that should hopefully have something like GPS. Canon has gradually put it in, like the S100 has GPS, although they didn't put it in the G1X, which is the world's largest power shop. So that was a shame. But Panasonic, you know, they started it off on cameras like that. It's got GPS. Plastic body, though, that's the thing.
Yeah,
And this is what happens to plastic bodies when you drop them, when you submerge them in bubble mixture. They're not very happy. So this was a tip that was given to me on Twitter and Google+. Everyone goes, you know, if you've dropped your phone somewhere damp, just stick it in a little tray full of rice, and it really works. I couldn't believe it.
I don't know. Somehow I think if they really, really wanted to get a GPS unit inside the metal body, they could figure out a way.
They could do it, yeah. Yeah, but then they don't sell you the accessory, and it's all about the accessories, isn't it? And that's the same reason we won't see an open source body from Canon and Nikon, because they want you to buy an intervalometer. They don't want a third party to write an app and give it away or take away some of their profits, which is ironic because more people would buy the body if it did, but they don't see like that. They just see it as, we've got to protect our accessories, we've got to protect our investment. So I don't think you'll see it from the big guys.
What's an airplane made out of?
An airplane?
Yeah.
Plastic.
Oh, okay. And that's how they do it? Yeah, to make the airplanes out of plastic?
Scott, you know how it works? It's got an antenna on the back of the airplane. It's got a little stick like on the back of an old car. It doesn't come from the inside of it.
I'd have a little antenna on my Canon.
They should do. They should have it like old school, like a telescopic one. You pull up and down like an old
controller. Yeah, like on the back of the Drummond's limousine.
Yeah, it can be a little wire that goes around the entire thing, like the antennas on car windows, right?
Yeah, the little zigzaggy...
Hey, I want everyone to show some of their favorite Canon photos. So while they get them ready, I'm going to have a little commercial break for something that's free, so it's not really a commercial break. But I just got word from our team here that the new Stuck on Earth 2.0 is in the iTunes store. Still free, so go grab it. We have an awesome new feature. It's called the Scoble feature, because he was the first to recommend it. Usually I don't really listen to what that guy says, but this was a good idea. It was one in a row from Scoble. And it was, if you zoom into a certain layer of the map, it drops pins all over the place, right? Anywhere from 50 to 200 pins, depending on where you have that slider. Well, now you can hit this one button down at the bottom, and it will download every one of those pictures into a new trip that's saved right there for you.
Ooh.
So it's an awesome new feature. And there's many other new things too in it.
Yep. I got to say, with the app, I was using it just like 2 days ago, and it actually helped me decide where I'm going to go on my next vacation.
Oh, boy. So, all right.
You're coming to San Francisco?
No. Not on the next vacation. Maybe later on. Do a road trip down to Northern California.
Ah, okay.
Well, let's kind of go in reverse order here of introductions, and I don't know if you're last or not, but Mel, you can go first and show some of your favorite Canon photos, and you guys can continue this ridiculous love fest.
I'll go. I just have a couple. Let me pull up. I'm working on am actually working on this very current photos, actually. Can you guys see that?
Yes.
Is it up for you guys? Okay, great. I'm working on my latest thing is I'm working on a Minnesota artist series. I'm trying to keep it going for the next year or so. Highlighting Minnesota artists, anything, musicians, painters, writers, I don't care. I don't discriminate. So I'm working with them. The hard part I'm learning is having an artist tell me it's okay to photograph them, because artists typically don't want anybody watching their work process. But I was just able to hook up with a woman named Carmen, and she's just learning the guitar. So I've been shooting her lately a lot, actually. So we've kind of been going on the whole inspirational kick and trying to highlight some, I don't know, you know, pull some inspiration out of it for both of us. For me, I guess I'm shooting with a rebel, an older rebel still. So for me, you know, I think about it and, you know, upgrading cameras would be lovely for the confidence factor, I think, when I go into shoots like this. And that dual card slot, I mean, for somebody like me, I do a lot of work for myself. She's a pastry chef. That's her art. So this is her. She's, you know, her pastry stuff. But for somebody like me, working with a dual card slot kind of thing, it's confidence all the way for somebody like me, I guess. I don't want to lose things. I don't want to go into something. I would shoot weddings more if I had something like that, and I know that. So I guess that's just real quick what I'm working on right now. Are you still looking at? Okay. Get this back up. But that's all Canon stuff. Definitely everything I work
on. So, Mel, do you really see a situation where people don't take you as seriously because you turn up at a pro job with a rebel? Is that an actual issue for you? Would it be better if you had a bigger, more expensive looking camera?
See, and that's what it comes down to for somebody like me, where it's I know what I do, and I know that I can do a good job at what I do. The problem is when I walk into it as something with a rebel, I have people who have better than me and what they're, you know. Oh, sorry, guys. And what they're... Thanks. Thanks, Dave. But, you know, I have people who have better than me in...
Uh-oh. Way to go, Gordon.
Oh, no.
Hey, I never suggested that. That was Dave in the private chat.
The dreaded unshare your screen, get kicked out of the Hangout bug.
Yeah.
Need to get you involved in that.
It was nice knowing her.
I'll be back.
All right. Hey, Thomas Hawk, why don't you share some pretty, pretty stuff with us?
All right. Well,
show us one of your secret shots. We know you already have the Mark III and you just can't say anything, but right. Just show. Whoa.
I wish. So here's, this is some stuff. Did that show? Can you see that?
Oh, yes. Is this one of your bathroom selfies?
Yes, this is. No, that's Charlie Blake. Wow. Lovely, lovely, lovely Charlie Blake. Sly Vegas' leading lady. And we were out shooting. We've actually been shooting a lot this past month. We went out to Alameda and shot some abandoned stuff, and then shot out on Treasure Island in this old abandoned naval barracks for a while. And... anyways, this is one of the reasons that I like the 5D Mark III is the 135mm f2 lens, which is my favorite lens, and it's just an amazing, it's so sharp, and it's got such nice depth of field, and does such a great job with the light. I mean, that's, for me, as much as I sort of complain about the Canon body and all these things I don't like about it, I love so many of their lenses, and so... That's sort of an example of what you can do. This is just typical San Francisco shot from the top of the Fairmont. Lots of color, saturation. Similar shot of the Chihuly exhibit in Las Vegas. Did again, with the 135 lens. Yeah, I post-process everything. I do everything in Lightroom, mostly. Yeah. Maybe a little bit of Photoshop.
I've got a shot of those, too, and those are very difficult to process.
Yeah, they are. I shot the abandoned Packard plant in Detroit. I've been shooting a lot of abandoned stuff in Detroit. I went to Detroit in January and shot a bunch of stuff. Northville Regional Psychiatric Hospital and some schools and all kinds of great stuff. But this is that's a frame there at the Packard plant. This is the Transamerica building, sort of an architecture shot shooting up the side of it, again with the 135 millimeter lens. I use that 135 f2 more than any other lens. Probably 80% of my shots are taken with that, and on the full frame, it just does such a great job. So I've been doing abstract stuff, you know, Naked Cowboy in New York.
Yep.
Friend of, he kind of looks like Trey a little bit there. this is a new Lycro camera that we're not talking about here tonight, but that Eric Chang is out with. I stopped by his place and took a couple of them with his eyes. Which again, this is that sort of really great depth of field that you get with the 135 f2 at shooting it at f2.
That's pretty cool. We've seen a few of those Lytros hanging out here at South by Southwest.
I can imagine. Yeah, they're interesting cameras, Trey. I'm looking forward to seeing what you end up doing with it.
Your secret project, Trey.
I've been muzzled. I can't say anything.
But that is a secret feature.
It's okay.
Yes.
Hey, look who has joined us here. It's Vic.
Hey, guys.
Vic. Hey, Vic.
Hey, Vic.
So,
hey, I heard Vic, I couldn't resist joining.
Well, yeah, you're interested in this new Canon, aren't we? We've got a good group of people here to help you out. What kind of questions do you have?
Well, I love my Canon 5D Mark II, the best camera I've ever owned. Absolutely love it, and I'm a photographer. I try to be a photographer. But I love the video capability. I love not having to carry a video camera. And then with some of my prime lenses, being able to record the family on vacations and drop down to 1.2 in video and capture those magical moments, even if it's just 20 or 30 seconds of video, is awesome. The only problem is that it doesn't autofocus. And so I have to do the manual focusing, which I guess adds to the effect. But I was waiting for the new Canon. I was waiting to be wowed. And I'm not sure if it's worth it or not. I'm not sure if I should just wait. I'm not sure what to do. So I'd love to hear the thoughts of everybody else.
Well, Vic, the problem with the way they do video on a DSLR, like the 5D Mark III, is that it's going to be almost impossible for them to continuously autofocus, because once the mirror flips up, it bypasses the phase change AF system. So the fast AF system's gone, and it has to rely on a contrast-based system, which on the Canon DSLRs is really slow. So I don't think you'll ever see quick and continuous AF on a Canon DSLR for movies. If you want that now, you need to go for something like a Sony SLT or a mirrorless CSC, like a Sony NEX or something like that. And they work really well for continuous autofocus. So it depends where your priorities lie, but it would involve switching systems.
Yeah, but I've already invested in all those Canon lenses that are amazing.
You could resell those for a pretty good...
Just hire a focus puller.
I'll take them.
Hire a focus puller to travel with you.
Well, I guess it does have kind of a magical film-like effect when you have to do your own focusing. And I'm okay with that, I guess. But I just was expecting more from the Canon 5D Mark III. And maybe
once I
get it in my hands, I'll be wowed. But I wasn't wowed.
Hey, Gordon, do you think that, you know, it's been 3 years about since the Mark II, and there's so few features in 3 years. I mean, what happened to Moore's Law? Is this sort of indicating the end of the DSLR wow factor if they can't do anything more than this in 3 years?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we said this about the D800 when it came out, that it kind of represents probably the pinnacle of where traditional conventional DSLR technology can go. Canon has basically just kind of taken the best parts of the 7D and the 1DX and put them in with a kind of so-called affordable full-frame body. With the 5D Mark III, but as we were saying at the beginning of the Hangout, there's nothing revolutionary about it. The D800, fairly revolutionary in that they've chosen to just get that numbers game and give it a big old hearty bear hug and say, let's go after medium format. Screw you guys down there. We're going to 36 megapixels with or without the anti-aliasing. But even then, that's about it. I mean, I can't believe when I was writing my preview on the D800 and on the 5D Mark III, that one of the features I was getting most excited about was a headphone jack. She's got a headphone socket. And it's like, is that what it's come to? $3,000, $3,500, and I'm getting excited about a headphone jack. And yet, at the mirrorless CES end, almost everything about them to me is exciting and new and revolutionary. I think they're kind of, we're seeing, these are probably some of the last iterations of traditional DSLRs.
Well, if you were, I'm sorry, Thomas, go ahead.
Well, I think the thing is where Canon, and Vic said this as well, where I think Canon's kind of got people locked in is with the lenses. I mean, I love my Canon lenses. That 135, the 14 millimeter. I love the new 8-15. You know, a fisheye zoom. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of. I feel like I'm captive with Canon, and not that I'm really captive, but I just love those lenses so much and what I can do with them and how sharp some of them are. You know, and I don't have the 70-200, but I've shot that before, and that's an amazing lens for shooting concerts and stuff like that. And so I don't know. I mean, there are these other technologies and this mirrorless technologies, but they don't come with this wide arsenal of really, really nice lenses. I don't know. Vic, what's your favorite lens?
Boy, that's a tough question. My favorite lens is probably my 50 or my 85 1.2.
Yeah, those are both nice.
Yeah, I love
them. They're great for video, really great for video.
Yeah, because the video is completely magical at the wide open aperture. It's just incredible.
How do you like the autofocus on those? Does it work well enough for you?
No, the autofocus on the 15mm is so slow, it's painful.
Oh, I hate it. It drives me nuts. Well, that's one thing I am hoping with the 61-point autofocus. I'm hoping that the Mark III might focus that lens better, because I love that lens too, but it's been a huge disappointment.
I'll tell you what I don't like. Is going on vacation and carrying four or five lenses and breaking my back. I'm a little guy. I'm not like a 6 foot tall guy. And so, you know, when I carry all those lenses, it's killing me. Right?
They're just... Well, Vic, this is why you need to go for a mirrorless CST. Just dump it. You already said it. You want continuous autofocus for movies and stills in one camera, and you want something that's smaller and lighter, but still the flexibility of interchangeable lenses. Go with a Micro Four Thirds or a Sony NEX, and you will not be disappointed.
Yeah, get the NEX-7. Sergey is getting the NEX-7. You should get it too.
Yeah, I should look into it. I got to admit, I've been somewhat blind. If it isn't a Nikon or a Canon, I don't even look at it.
So, Vic, when you're coaching your family to film them, do you have to tell them to only move left and right and not forward and backwards?
Yeah. It's so funny. My children even know that when I'm filming at the wide open aperture, they learn that they have to stay within the same plane. It's so funny. My kids know, like, don't move within that plane, otherwise dad loses focus.
You know, one of the nice things, Vic, do you do much handheld filming? Do you suffer from the jello effect, the dreaded jello?
What's the jello effect? The shaking?
Yeah, where if you shake it at a certain frequency, you get this really horrible kind of jelly kind of effect. And that's because it's reading the data off the sensor as it goes down. They have improved that. By how much, it's hard to say. Trey, our pal, Jim Mashvitz, was hinting on that on Twitter earlier. He reckoned it improved it quite a lot. The scaling is definitely better. If you're suffering from Wire, point it, when you do have it in focus, Vic, point it at some thin horizontal and vertical lines and see what it does. And they have improved the Moiré on it for video. So there are some benefits. And it's got a headphone socket. It's got a headphone socket. So, you know, there are some things.
Well, maybe I'll try the Sony you recommended.
Well, it's worth a try.
I'll fire over a couple of models that you should check out. There's two or three that you should definitely try out, because you might think, when you pick them up and you use them, you might think, you know what, this isn't for me. I don't like it. But some people who pick them up, it's like, you know, the whole Road to Damascus experience. They're like, this is it. This is it. I can't believe it. This is the camera I've been waiting for. Someone's finally made it and put it in my hands. But sometimes you need somebody to actually kind of push it into your hands, because you're not quite, you can be so blinkered. One can be so blinkered about the big brands that it's easy to kind of just forget about them, because you're so kind of obsessed about the lenses or the kind of heritage or the legacy. So we can suggest some cool options for you.
Yeah. The other frustrating thing is the D800 and the 5D Mark II and the Canon 1DX or whatever it's called. I can't buy any of them. So this is like terrible. I can only read about them and I can't buy them. This is like crazy frustration.
Do you think they should announce them and then be available in the shops the same day? Would everybody want that?
They should. Yeah. I want that. Yeah. I hate having to wait and not know. You know, I've got two orders in. When's it coming? Will I have it for Utah? No, probably not. Next week. But, you know, you'd like to know when you could have it, when you can count on getting it.
Put your name in at Picture Line in case it arrives when you're in Utah.
Yeah, I don't know.
The thing I really love about Apple's model is that not only is the new model available almost immediately, but the old one just ceases to exist. It's like, where did the old one go? And when you're ordering, like I ordered it, I'm so sad I turned into a bit of an Apple fanboy on portables anyway. Not on desktops. I'm building my muscle PC at the moment. As we speak, it's going to power up with smoke pouring out the top of it later this evening. But I ordered the iPad 3 within about half an hour of it being announced. And of course, it doesn't say it's the iPad 3. And you're looking for it as you do. You're so excited. You're looking for the option for the iPad 3. And it's not. It's just the iPad. And that kind of always freaks me out a bit. But it's quite cool that they can do that. That as of that moment, the old one doesn't exist.
I don't know. You know, I waited in line for the very first iPhone overnight. I spent the night in line. And at least I knew I would get one the next day. At least I knew I could get one. And I hate not knowing, you know. I want to know that I could go down to a store and get it, or I could put it in order and get it, you know.
Well, maybe, Thomas, it's like dating, you know. You never know if you can get the girl or not. And, you know, wow. That's why you love them.
Well, Thomas, here's a question, Thomas. Yeah. Are your photos going to suffer because you don't have the 5D Mark III in your hands the moment you want it?
No, they're not. But, you know, I get very antsy sometimes. When a new technology's out and I can't get a hold on it, I don't know. I don't like to wait as long as Trey does for the lady, you know. I want it now.
You were the same way with the Galaxy Nexus.
Yeah, same way with the – but, I the Galaxy Nexus, the day it came out, I got one. But I was able to go stand – unfortunately, I didn't have to spend the night in line for the Galaxy Nexus, but –
This was almost going to be a Galaxy Nexus, but it appears to have come back to life. This is a Galaxy S, and I was about to get a Galaxy Nexus, but it's come back to life. But I'm still thinking about it. Should I get one?
They're great. It's the best phone I've ever had. But I waited in line a little over an hour at the first store in San Francisco that opened was the Verizon store on Battery and Pine, I think. And I waited a little over an hour and got one, but. At least you can get one, you know. At least you can wait in line. The stuff with, you know, I've got pre-orders of Adorama and B&H. I think also my experience with getting a 5D Mark II was so bad. It's like I got on the pre-lists. I got on like three of them. And then it was like everybody was getting one but me. It was like 2 months had gone by and I still couldn't get it. So that kind of upset me.
And that 8 to 15, well, Thomas, even I got that before you. And I'm in New Zealand.
Same thing, Gordon.
How's that possible?
I know you had the 8-15 lens a good 5 weeks before I could get it from B&H. 5 weeks, which is crazy. It's a great lens. I love that lens, by the way. I mean, that's my main reason for being with Canon is those lenses. It's got an amazing. Who has that great a lineup of lenses? Is Canon?
Nikon.
You think, Trey?
Do you have a fisheye zoom, Trey?
I've never needed such a silly lens.
Trey, can you hold
it? Neither did Thomas until he got it. Now it's his favorite lens.
I love the 8-15 fisheye. It's an amazing. You know, I really debated back and forth, Gordon, as you know, because you were in that thread on Google Plus when I was saying, should I get it? Should I not get it? And, you know, in the end, I decided to get it, but I was very tentative because it's a lot of money for an oddball lens. And I thought it was going to be more of an oddball lens. It's turned out to be a lens that I use very frequently. Almost every time I go out, I love it. Particularly, not even the 8mm, which is kind of funky, more with the circle, but at 15mm, it does a great job. It does a wonderful job on the 15 and 14 and in that range.
It's interesting that each manufacturer, like when you're buying it, it's a very important decision to make. It's the hardest decision to make when you buy a new camera. You haven't got any loyalty to a brand or a system. So you could buy Canon or Nikon or Sony or whatever, and you're trying to decide based on lenses because one of your enthusiast friends has said, hey, it's not about the body, it's about the lenses. And you go, okay, let's have a look at the lenses. And you think, hey, well, they've both got 18-55s, they've both got 50 mils, they've both got 85s. And eventually you think they've all got exactly the same lenses, so go with whichever one's got the nicest body, right? But then when you really get into it, and only when you really get into it, you see these little gaps where one of them has got this fantastic option and the other one doesn't. And you notice these really cool lenses that, say, Nikon has that just Canon just have never produced, and vice versa. And it's quite cool to find this, but unfortunately, it's impossible to know about those unless you've got a load of really kind of geeky friends who've been into it for a while. It's quite tricky.
You know, I do have to say, too, I do like Canon's CPS program. It's a wonderful program. You pay $500 a year for the Platinum, and any repairs are 60% off. They a special delivery. They pay shipping both ways. Send it into them. They have it back to you within 1 day. You know, they're doing all my cleaning. I think that's, they do a really good job with that sort of service on that. You have to buy enough stuff to qualify for it. Mm-hmm. But once you do.
But is it any better than NPS? Is it any better than Nikon Professional Services?
Well, I don't know. I can demo all these lenses. All I got to do is pay the return shipping. I don't know what Nikon's like. You know, I know that, you know, I get 5 free cleanings a year. I get my repairs or everything sent Federal Express overnight. I send like a lens in on a Monday. I have it back before the weekend, fixed if it's broken, with a 60% discount on the repair, which is, I don't know, pretty good. I don't know how well Nikon does, but I love CPS. The Platinum program is $500 a year, but it's a great program.
I'd love to turn up there and say I've come for my free cleaning.
Well, hey guys, I gotta run. Thanks for letting me drop in.
Sure. See you, Vic. Thank
Bye
you.
Bye,
you guys.
See you later.
Well, we were sharing pictures here before we were so rudely interrupted by Vic. So let's return to that. Who was next? How about you, Nicole?
Sure, I can go next. Go ahead and screen share. That didn't work.
Ruh-roh.
There we go.
Nicole's going to share some stuff that's going to make me all hungry.
No, actually, I'm not sharing any food photos. I'm sharing more of my personal stuff.
I tried to find that spot. I'm so jealous.
Oh,
if you would have put that in Stuck on Earth. I drove around that park area. I gotta say,
this, okay, so the story behind this photo is, I mean, this is in Seattle. This is a skyline shot of Seattle. And I have to tell the condensed story, or the story that doesn't give all the details away, just because I don't want to get anyone in trouble. But I was with some of my really good friends, Brian Matias, James Brandon, and Jacob Lucas. And Jacob Lucas used his Aussie charm to basically talk to someone to get us to this spot that we photographed this
from.
Oh,
I know where you are now.
So it's not something that you can access. It's not a public place. We guys basically got really lucky. So this... it's very kind of a cliche photo if you don't have access to this, or you can get on a bridge that does a very similar photo. Trey actually has a shot from the bridge that's very beautiful. And you can tell there's a little bit of difference in height, but it kind of goes along the line. Actually, I wrote a blog post recently about basically taking advantage of the time you have, where you are, or the people you're with, and photographing things and not being lazy. And this kind of, 'cause I've moved around a lot, and I look back on the places I've lived, like Hawaii, Monterey, California, and thankfully when I was in Utah, I felt that I used my time wisely. But these other places, I wasn't quite up to the level of photography that I am now, and I kind of regret that I wasn't as interested in things like landscape or long exposures or anything like that. So this is kind of one of my photos that it falls in line with that. You know, I'm trying to get out more and actually photograph my surroundings. And I mean, it also goes with people, with the people we love, with our family, our parents, our grandparents, you know, to actually try and photograph them instead of just, you know, forgetting about it, or, you know, getting caught up in the moment. So that's this photograph. I also have a few other images of my travels when I was in Vietnam. In November, I traveled out there as a vacation, basically. It was personal travel. And I just brought my camera and I walked around and did a bunch of shooting. And this is a photo in Hoi An, which is a really beautiful town. It's very shopping central, kind of touristy. But I got up before the crack of dawn, and I saw this. This photo would not have existed if I didn't get up early enough to shoot it, because I photographed all these hanging out there, and then a few minutes into shooting this, the woman walked out, moved things around, and eventually a few minutes later, all of these were gone, all of the things that were hanging on the hangers. And, of course, it would have been filled with tourists. I don't even think I would have been able to find this spot again, just because it looks so different at a different time of day. But this is actually one of my favorites. Another image here. This is a city, a town, a village. I think it was real close to Hoi An, a pottery village. I'm very into pottery. When I lived in Utah, I took classes, and I actually haven't gotten into it yet again. But this woman was like 88, I think, just crouching next to this pottery wheel with someone else kicking it to make it go. It wasn't electronic. And, you know, these are all just my personal photos. I'm trying to expand what I shoot and make a lot more images for myself, as opposed to just images for work, which, you know, Thomas kind of hinted at food. I do food photography. I do other type of stock photography, lifestyle. photographs of people. But mostly in the last year, I've really been focusing on food photography. So that's a lot of my work stuff. I share a lot of that, but this is kind of the stuff that's really dear to my heart, just getting out and just shooting, you know, for the fun of it and stuff that I love. And also while I was in Vietnam, I did a lot of people. I loved to photograph people, and I didn't exactly know what to expect when I got there. I didn't know very much about the country, and I found myself always gravitating to photographing people. And I'm very open to, you know, connecting with people I contact and asking if I, you know, doing the, you know, the gestures of, can I take your picture, pointing at them, pointing at my camera. And so this was one of those images that I think I took 3 frames, and this one was like the second to last frame. And she was really shy for a moment, and then all of a sudden I caught that perfect look, and then and then it was gone within a half second afterwards. But I walked around with my Canon 5D Mark II. My lens of choice is my 70 to 200. I think actually every single photo that I shared here was photographed with that lens. So that's
Nicole, 2.8 or F4?
The F4, it's the IS version. I don't really, I don't do a lot of low light, you know, need to have a really wide open lens. And that 2.8 is, first of all, it's more expensive. Second of all, it's huge. And the 4 works great. I use it for my food photography a lot.
It's better quality.
Oh, it's so sharp. And I do a lot of manual focus when I'm, you know, working off of my tripod and stuff. So, but I love that lens. It's my absolute favorite go-to lens for almost anything. I basically walked around with that setup, and I every once in a while would switch to a different lens. But then I'd find that, oh, I'm not really getting what I like, so I'd switch back.
Cool. Thanks for sharing those, yeah. Nicole. Always fun to see your stuff. How about you, Scott Kublin? You want to share some of your...
Yeah.
Share some of the ones that I like. Don't share the ones that you like.
Okay. You want me to share pictures that I took of you?
No. No. Scott and I always have differing opinions of what's good, but I want to see what he puts up here. You never know. This is a wild card. Be ready to avert your eyes, audience.
Can you see my screen now?
Yeah, we see your personal documents.
Okay, well, but did the picture load up?
No, we don't. No, you'll have to share your desktop. The space bar isn't really taking up. We see the small version.
All right. We see your Finder window, basically.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I'll share the desktop.
It's a very mysteriously named directories there, I must say.
You see,
we're trying to intuit your secret life through your directory structure. Yes, we see that.
Yes, we see it.
All right.
Gorgeous. He has the restrained and non-restrained folders, Trey.
This was over in South Carolina. My wife and I were over at a place called Fripp Island, and we walked along the beach, and she saw this piece of driftwood. She said, that'd make a great picture, and I was like, yeah, whatever. So I put this picture out there on Google+.
Make me a pie.
Did you have some laundry to do? Anyway.
That's a little too much, Scott. Mine was funny. Yours was just off. Okay, anyway, keep going.
So I put this picture out there on Google+, and I mean, people just plus one and commented on this thing like crazy. And it's just funny because I've traveled, you know, all over the world now and taken pictures of the Eiffel Tower and Swiss Alps and put those pictures out there. And a piece of driftwood got more attention than all those other ones. But so here's a piece of driftwood.
It's a great photo. It's beautiful.
All right.
Listen to your wife more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So this one, I shared this on a previous hangout, but this is called Green Mountain Sunset. This is going against what we're supposed to be doing. This was taken with the D3X, but this was taken in Vermont when I was doing my little comparison. But, you know, this is a nice picture, but the significance of this picture is, to me, I thought I was going to die the day that I took this picture because I had to hike up. It was like this treacherous trail that I thought was going to take an hour, and it took me about 3.5 hours. And I ran out of water in the first hour. The only thing I had to drink when I got to the top and was almost passed out was some of those 5-hour energies. And I figured that probably wasn't a good idea, but I was thirsty anyways, so I drank them, and that just made matters worse. Anyways, I stayed up there an extra 3 hours waiting for the sun to go down, got this picture, and then hiked down this mountain in the dark and made it back to my car about dead. My cell phone rings, and it was my daughter, and she said, "Dad, I can't get my printer to work." I was like, all right, that put everything into perspective right there. Let's see. This is from Yellowstone a couple weeks ago. This one was a real popular one.
Oh, wow.
That's Google nice. Plus.
I missed that one in your stream. It's good.
Yeah, this is this was with my Canon 5D too. I think this was probably, I don't know if this is my 24 to 70 or my 17 to 40, but this is just one of the thermals that's around the Old Faithful area. I got up early in the morning for a sunrise, and it started out really, really foggy and overcast, but the sun just came out and there was a break in the clouds and I got this shot. And if you look carefully at the thermal, you can see just how deep it is. I don't know if you see my mouse or not, but you can really see that it goes down quite a bit. And another Yellowstone picture, which I've worked on this one quite a bit, but this is just another one of the thermals that was, it just kept having these eruptions. And I took so many different shots of this and was trying to capture the eruption when it showed the trails shooting off of it, and settled on this one and worked on this one for several hours, but it turned out really, really nice. And seems a lot of people like that one. You still seeing all these?
Yep.
Yes.
Are you looking silent good in awe? this is the Eiffel Tower that I shot. I was with you, Trey, in Paris. And when I took this shot, I think you and my wife and your wife were probably right up towards the top of the tower. Trey's got a picture that he took from the top of the tower looking down, and I'm tagged on it. And it's me down in the field taking this shot.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find that one.
Another popular shot from Yellowstone. This is one of the reasons I like the 5D2 is because of, you know, I wasn't this close to the bison. We were snowmobiling, and the bison just show up, and you have to kind of pull over and just wait for them to pass by. And I got out there and took this shot. But this is a very, very tight crop. And because of, I guess, the megapixels of the 5D2, I was able to get this nice tight crop where it still has a pretty nice details in it. Actually, I think there was another bison off here to the side, but it just didn't balance the thing, so he was vanished. I might have shared this one before. This was over in London. This was at Trey's photo walk that he held before he had his workshop. And if you look on the bridge, it's just filled with people who were on the photo walk. I didn't kind of walk along with the people in the photo walk. I just walked around on my own and got this shot. And this one, a lot of people like this one. I won a Photoshop Guru Award last year for this shot for the retouching category. Looked like crap before. It was a thunderstorm and the church was crooked and I made it all sunny and cloudy.
And that was an award, by the way, that Scott awarded to himself.
Yeah, the Guru Award. no, and this is another one. I didn't purposely choose pictures that I shot when I was with Trey, but I was with Trey when he had his press credentials for the final launch of the Space Shuttle Atlantis, and they allowed us to go out the night before for what they called a sunset shot and get pictures, and it had been pouring rain, and there was puddles everywhere, and there was a puddle out here, and I always put this little disclaimer out there that Trey took this shot first, and I saw him set up, so I set up in his shot, which I usually do not like to do. I usually like to try and compose my own shots, but I just I saw him getting it, and I was like, you know what, that is a good shot, and I took it too. So I sell my print for, I don't know, $1,000, and he sells his for $200. I'm just kidding. I don't sell it. That's all I have here. Trey, do you have your Eiffel Tower picture? Did you find it?
Yeah, I found it here. Let me share it. So this is the one that I took from up above while you were taking yours from down below.
I don't see Scott. Where is he?
Do you see these yellow bushes here?
See, yeah. That's me down there. Person down there.
He's the little dot behind the yellow bushes.
These two pictures tell you everything you need to know about Trey's relationship with Scott, I think.
or my wife, right? Because she's up there in the tower with him.
Oh, really? Was this before or after the log incident, Scott?
that little yellow dot was him?
Yes.
You see, if that was taken with the D800, you'd be able to zoom in and see him.
Someone should tell him to put some clothes on when he's posing for a picture.
I sat there for about 3 hours to get that shot because I was really trying to outdo Trey's picture of the Eiffel Tower. But of course, the day before I arrived, there was this picture-perfect sunset that had evolved just for Trey's arrival.
Bad luck for you, Scott. That must suck. Okay, let's go to who have we missed? Gordon, you want to show us some of your some of your work?
I'm sticking loosely to the theme that you originally suggested, which was to have some sort of canon-related thing. So let's see what I can do. So these are all. Can you see some pictures now?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can you see that?
Yes.
Cool. That's an Aurora picture that I took in Norway, in near to a town called Tromsø, which is north of the Arctic Circle. This was taken with a 5D Mark I, and this camera was fresh as. I can't believe I've used that expression. It was fresh as at the time because it had literally been out for a couple of weeks. And I borrowed it from Canon for this trip because I really wanted the kind of full frame. I wanted the full frame, not so much for the sensitivity, but for the lenses that it opened up. And this is, you know, the thing with full frame cameras is that manufacturers like Canon and Nikon put all their kind of, not just their best lenses, but their largest variety of lenses are designed for it at the wide end. So when you've got an APS-C, a crop frame body, there's usually like maybe one or two wide angle options. But if you've got full frame, there's tens of wide angle options. There's even the same lenses in different focal ratios, if you prefer that, you know, and it's just this variety. So this was taken with the 35mm f1.4, which was great for this kind of shot. This was about 15 seconds, I think, for 800 ISO. It wasn't that sensitive because that Aurora was super bright. And there's Aurora actually striking the Earth right now, as you know. As you probably know, that we're at a point of high sunspot activity. So look out. If you're far north or far south, look out for some Aurora activity. There was some in Queenstown last night, but I was in bed. Here's another wide-angle shot. This was taken with, again, 5D Mark I. See me sticking to the theme here. This was on the Bolivian Altiplano, which, if you're into crazy landscapes, is an amazing place to visit. This was taken with a 17-40, again, 17mm, again, one of the Canon system. You've got the choice between that or the 16-35 2.8. And it's so nice to have those options. On the Nikon, you've got the 14-24, or they do a 17-40 or something to 40 with VR. And it's so nice to have all these options at the ultra-wide end. That, for me, is the real kind of hidden benefit of full frame. A lot of people go on about the sensitivity, but for me, it's about wide-angle lenses. Here's another shot from on the same day of some crazy moss. I was told, I don't know if he was winding me up or not, that this was the oldest plant in the world or something. It's I should come up with a figure now. It's very old.
Gordon, this is when you went through your polarizing addiction, right?
Yes. Yeah, and I regret it now. I totally regret it now. All of these pictures, I should say, are totally unprocessed. They're straight from the camera. They're JPEGs straight from the camera. They're not even RAW files that I've tweaked. But what I have done is managed to ruin them all with a polarizing filter, especially this last one. Everyone goes through this phase. You get a polarizing filter, you turn it around and go, oh, look at the sky, it looks fantastic, wow, I want all my pictures to look like that. And then about 2 years later, you look at it and you think, God, I wish I'd not done that. So I would say to anyone who's really into polarizers, take two pictures, one with and one without, because, you know, maybe you'll still like it in the future. But I look at these pictures and I think, oh man, look at that sky! It looks ridiculous. So that's my ridiculous sky. This is another shot taken with the 5D Mark I. This was Comet McNaught, which was a big comet in the Southern Hemisphere a few years ago. This was taken with the 85mm 1.8, and this is what you get on that. This is uncropped. This thing was massive. This was about a 3 or 4 minute exposure. Again, the benefit I wanted to illustrate here was of the high sensitivity of a full-frame body. That's what I was trying to do with these pictures. Now, moving on to the 5D Mark III, one of the things that hopefully it will let you do is some more action photography, and that's useful for wildlife photography. Here's my Brook Falls bear shot. where I went to Alaska a couple of years ago, that's a fantastic location to go to. The thing with wildlife photography, or what proper wildlife photographers will say to you, you know what, you've got to wait for days, weeks, months, years to get that shot. I turned up to Brooks Falls, and within 3 minutes, I got this shot, and within 4 minutes, I'd videoed it. And I was like, oh, well, I guess I go home now. That's it. I came here for these two things. And then I actually did the rare thing for a photographer, which is actually sit back and then enjoy the spectacle without taking any pictures or video, because I'd already captured it. This was taken with a separate... Yeah, shoot.
Gordon, how much did you have to pay the guy in the bear suit?
Yeah. Well, Trey was doing cheaper rates at the time, because he wasn't as famous as he is now. So it's not...
Yeah, I'm double the price of Scott Jarvie.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this was taken with the 7D, which was very new at the time. The reason I chose the 7D is I rented it from borrowlenses.com just for this portion of the trip, just for 2 weeks. And the 100 to 400 millimeter, which is a fantastic wildlife lens. The reason I went for the 7D is because it's got 8 frames per second and it has very fast autofocus. And it's not water resistant, but it can take a few splashes. So for all those reasons, that's why the 7D was a great camera for this. And the reason I wanted to share this picture is because hopefully the 5D Mark III will also be a great camera for this. It might only, in inverted commas, shoot at 6 frames per second, but that's a lot faster than 3.9. And that 61-point AF system should be really, really sweet. I also switched to video with this moments later and was filming video with that lens, which was really nice. And here's another action shot. I took this last winter in New Zealand. Winter in New Zealand, seasonally opposite to you guys. So this was about October last year. This was the first time I've done a shot like this. This is the most processed picture I've taken in a long time. And it's just a composite. This was taken with the EOS 1D Mark IV, which is Canon's previous top-end sports camera. Of course, it's the 1DX. Now, this is shooting at 10 frames a second. Now, obviously, again, at 6 frames per second, the 5D Mark III is...
Whoops. We lose Gordon. Well, while we wait for Gordon, why don't we go with our emergency release valve here and have Dave show a few of his photos.
Yeah,
I think
so,
Gordon just kicked back in.
Oh, wait.
Ah.
Okay, am I back?
You're back.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I was saying the thing with this was taking at 10 frames a second. There was a guy next to me shooting at 3 frames per second, so he only got like 3 guys. I got 10 guys, and a 5D Mark III would get 6 guys. So it's still not as good as this. This was taken with the 1D Mark IV, so it's still not as powerful as that. But the reason I showed this was that this kind of picture, this kind of sequence becomes more possible with a 5D Mark III than it did with the Mark II. And with that, I bid the pictures farewell.
All right. Thanks, Gordon. And, well, now that I got Dave all hot and bothered, I might as well have him show his photos.
Don't forget about Frederick, too, Trey. I want to see his pictures.
Well, Frederick had to drop out for connection problems.
Yeah, he's gone like the wind.
This series of shots is all stuff I took at the New Jersey Botanical Gardens. They're all They're all with my T2i and using Magic Lantern for 9 bracket exposures.
Whoa, wait a minute. Is that an HDR you're telling me?
Yeah.
Oh.
What'd you edit that with?
Lightroom, Photoshop, and On1 Perfect Suite.
Cool.
Hey, Scott, critique that photo. Not that he asked for one. This is an emergency critique. Go for it.
I didn't get the vibe from you of what type of review.
Well, no. I mean, whatever you want to give it. Just, you know.
No, I mean, it's just... I like it. The fact is HDR, I'm not seeing the detail in the sky, but it's just, it's a neat effect. I don't know that you would have had to take a lot of bracketed shots to come up with something like this, but.
No, I agree. I just had it set to 9, so I just shot at 9 all day.
Yeah. Well, it's just like when I rented the D3X, I didn't need to take 11, but it sure sounded awesome when there was other people next to me.
I like it, Dave. I give it a big thumbs up. I thought it was a cool photo.
Yeah, I give it 2 thumbs up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 2 thumbs up.
So here's another one with the light shining through onto a tree that used to be there. Also a 9 bracket. This one probably benefited from the 9 brackets shooting right into the sun there.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
This one is the Skylands Manor itself.
Yeah,
I don't know if the detail really shows up in the hangout or not.
Yeah, wait, that's Trey's house?
That's his shed, Thomas.
Well, that's the guest house for
Trey. That's where he keeps the lawnmower.
Okay.
That's cool, too. Dave, I think you're falling in love with photography.
Am I now?
Yes. I mean, remember a few months ago, you were just kind of take it or leave it. You took a few pictures of your kids, and you were kind of interested in it. But look, this is a new page in your book.
That's right. Chapter 1.3.
Yeah. This is exciting.
So, Dave, you're using Magic Lantern to unlock the true potential of your Canon DSLR.
That is
There's
correct.
Lots of people who might be watching who don't know what Magic Lantern does, or they're worried that it's not safe. You know, will it break their camera or void their warranty? Can you tell us a bit about using Magic Lantern?
Yeah, Magic Lantern is a firmware enhancement. It doesn't actually make any real changes to your camera. It just changes it so that the boot flag on the camera will allow you to boot off the memory card. So what happens is it boots its own little kind of software enhancement whenever you turn on the camera, and it gives you a whole crap ton of options of things you can do. You can do an intervalometer, 9-bracket exposures, all different kinds of stuff. A lot of video features too, which I don't use, but it's pretty neat. And
it's perfectly safe because it doesn't change anything on the camera.
Yeah, I wouldn't say perfectly. There are a few like oddball stories of people that might have wrecked their cameras, but there's no like real hard evidence. And it's usually somebody had the wrong firmware version when they tried it and stuff like that. And
can it scratch the sensor?
Can it scratch the sensor? No.
Oh, okay.
I've had no problems with it whatsoever. It was really easy to install.
Just checking.
There's conflicting opinions on the chat, on the Twitch chat. We've got Magic Lantern is very safe, followed by it is not perfectly safe.
Well, I wouldn't say perfectly. Decide. Yeah, I wouldn't say perfectly. But
I'd be afraid it would scratch my sensor. Doing surgery on a camera like that.
Well, no, you install it onto the card.
I know, I'm joking.
Okay.
I like that shot.
Don't realize that, so.
I'm joking.
You take the card out, it's gone.
Yeah, these are all the same day, the same location, just various.
That's a cool effect.
Yeah, I'm really digging the on-one perfect effects.
You know, lot of that stuff with Color FX Pro as well.
My trial ran out on that, so I don't have that anymore.
Dave, it's really cool that you said all these are taken the same day, same place, yet they all look so different. I mean, it's kind of a cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. So yeah. Those are my shots.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks for sharing those. Cool. All right. Well, let's go. Let's finish this up with some discoveries that we've made on Google Plus. I'll kind of quickly show mine. Let me share my screen here. And screen share. Okay, my desktop here. Okay. All right. So this gentleman is named Lars van de Goor. I think that's how you say it. It sounds like a Dutch name, but I'm not sure. Anyway, can you see when I mouse over how it gets bigger by chance?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we can see that.
This is a cool plugin. I forgot which one this is called, but I use it all the time. Because I don't actually have to click on stuff. I just get to see
it. I had to uninstall that plugin because it kept making like white pictures that wouldn't load.
Ah, that's strange.
Hover Zoom or whatever it's called.
Yeah, I think it's called Hover Zoom. Look at that picture. This guy's great.
Yeah.
The Hover Zoom is also cool, by the way, because you can hover over people's avatars and it'll get big. So if you want to see what they look like and stuff. Look at this guy. I have him in a special circle called Great Photographers. And there's not many people in this circle. And he is in there. And he has amazing range and does all kinds of stuff. Really, really cool stuff. I mean, they almost look like, Pixar concept art. Look at that.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Look at that. That guy's great. Okay, I could go on and on, but go ahead and circle up that guy. I highly recommend it. Okay, next, how about you, Nicole? You want to share one for us?
Sure. Go ahead and share my window here.
Hey, Dave, will you make notes of all these people so that we can plus mention them when I repost this?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, so my discovery is Mikko Lagerstedt out of Finland. His photos are, yeah, it's awesome. I'll just go ahead and jump straight to his photos. So you can see, I mean, just in looking at, I love just the subtleness that they're not like jump in your face with color, which isn't bad. It's just, there's a, you know, just has a very, a theme kind of with his images. They're very, a lot of mist, backlighting. Go ahead and full screen this. Yeah. Just very eerie. I mean, this is, looks like the Eiffel Tower here, and that's just like creepy. It's like awesome creepy. So I was just really fascinated when I found his stream, and just some absolutely beautiful stuff.
Great. Fine. This is quickly becoming my favorite segment of the show. It's great. I'm always amazed. There's always more cool photographers to find. It's like an endless supply out there.
All right. So that's a. Mikko.
I love Mikko's work. He was one of my favorite first people I found on here, other than you, Trey, of course.
Oh, come on, Mel. All right, but that was so sweet. You can go next, Mel.
Okay, let me try not to mess it up this time.
All right.
I have somebody who, I have Jared Knutson. Can you guys see him?
Yes.
All right. He only is in 522 circles, and he is awesome. He shoots with Canon. He's a rebel shooter, just like I am. And he shoots a lot like I do. He shoots really everyday kinds of things, but he can just make it pop. And it just, everything he does is a little different. And I love his stuff. Every time he posts, and you know, he's one of those people who when he writes and when he writes along with his stuff, he's clever with, you know, what he says and how he does it too. So he's my screen share and my artist. Okay, now how do I get out of here, Dave, without Xing everything off?
Just click on screen share in the Hangout. So go back to the Hangout. There you go.
Oh, awesome. Okay. I don't want to X it all off again. Okay.
Cool. All right. Scott, who do you have for us?
Well, I didn't pick people that didn't have a lot of followers. I just picked people that kind of give me inspiration for new photographers that I've kind of seen them evolve. So let's share desktop. See everything?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, a lot of you might be familiar with Ben, but if you're not, his photography is just incredible. It's Ben Canales, Canales. And I believe he lives in Oregon. And I think Karen Hutton just went on a photo walk with him not too long ago. But he just does a lot of these nighttime time-lapse type photography. And they're just the types of things that when you see them, you're just like, wow, I'm not worthy. I mean, I think one of these won some contest for National Geographic. But, I mean, just look at that. It's just incredible to me to see shots like that. There's another favorite. Look at this one here with this tent lit up at night with a fire going. It's just, I don't know. There's just something about his shots that I really, really love to look at and... It's one of the things I want to try and learn. Number two, very popular photographer. He's got some incredible landscapes. Mike Shaw, yes. Shaw.
Again, yeah, Mike is great.
Oh, yeah. I mean, his stuff is just, again, you look at this stuff and it just puts your work in perspective where you can see you've got so much farther to go. His shots are just jaw-dropping. I mean, just look at that. You're just like, wow.
By the way, do you know the space bar key? I'll get rid of those comments.
Yeah.
Yes.
I do now. The Way of the Lost. Yeah. Like, I mean, just look at that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much he's doing in post, but I don't care. I don't know. It just kind of gives me some inspiration. Okay. And then the last one, this is Susan Porter. She's part of one of those 365 projects, which I guess encourages people to post one photo per day. And when I first got on Google Plus, she was just someone who I started following. I can't remember how I learned of her, but I've just watched her evolve her photography when she first started out. You could tell that she had recently gotten started in it. And throughout the past 6-7 months, I've really seen her work come to life, the whole compositional part of it. She does a lot of food stuff. I wish I could figure out which ones of her shots she added when she first started, but she changed her profile. midway and had to re-upload everything. But her shot's a lot of food, a lot of floral stuff, but you know, it's not really the landscape stuff that, that a lot of us are into. It's just the fact that you can see somebody who started, you know, within the last 6 or 7 months in the photography, see how she's evolved. It just kind of gives some people some inspiration so that they don't feel like it's something that's going to take them 5 to 10 years to pick up. Those are my three.
All right, cool. Thanks. Gordon.
Cool. Right, I'm going to share a fellow expat Brit in New Zealand. He's called Simon Morris. I think he's based in Christchurch.
I like Simon. He is one of the regular commenters on my blog, and he like comes every day. So,
I like he's very good on Google Plus as well. He's good degree of engagement. I think you would say technically.
Very engaged.
He'll always give you a nice chat. I think, and Simon, I might be doing you a massive disservice here. I'm not 100% sure, but I think he might also be from Manchester, which is my hometown, which would explain a lot. And he does some nice kind of landscape shots, none of which are appearing. Here they are, they're not always the kind of big Central Otago-type Queenstown mountain shots, but they show a kind of other side to New Zealand that I kind of really like, kind of peaceful and quiet. And I kind of like I like these pictures. And as Trey said, he's a good guy as well. So
I'll give some of Simon's pictures. Simon.
Yeah, we good people need to stick together.
There you go, Simon. You owe me one.
Thanks, Gordon. Thomas, did you share one?
Not yet. I can.
I don't think so.
Let's see here.
You'll be the last one.
Okay, so let's see. So the first person I'm going to show, I'm actually going to show a couple real quick, but this is Ed Sarecki, who, believe it or not, he has less than 400 people following him, and he is amazing. He shoots all kinds of stuff in Detroit. He uses a tilt shift lens with a Canon 5D Mark II. This is in the Farwell Building in Detroit, and I was actually with him when he was taking these. But beautiful, beautiful pictures of abandoned Detroit. He's got such talent. And so that's Ed. And then a couple people that people probably know, Sly Vegas. I'm going to give Sly a plug here. I was also with Sly when he took this picture. This was last weekend. And this is Michael Bonacore spinning still wool on fire and all the sparks that are coming off. And walking down the hallway of this abandoned place on Treasure Island. So Sly is, there's Michael Bonacore there. This is what it looks like without the nighttime and the fire. And that's me and Charlie. And there's more of Charlie and Sly Vegas. And there's Michael Bonacore, who we all know and love. More of Charlie. So Sly Vegas. And then the quick third person I'm going to talk about is Athena Carey, who's Lotus Carroll's sister, did this great series called Solitude. And it's very, very stark. It's very, very, let me pull this up. Why isn't it going to the next picture? Oh, here we go.
Athena's great, and she's always up for a chat as well. She's really good at engagement.
She's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful work. So, I love the minimalism. Yeah, that's Lotus's sister. She lives over in Europe.
Is she really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, but beautiful, very stark, black and white, very classic stuff. So. Anyways, Ed Sarecki and Sly Vegas and Athena Carey.
Awesome. Great suggestions. Okay, well, thank you, everybody. I hope you had fun. I had a great time. I thought I would seize up at some point hearing about so much Canon nonsense, but it was nice. I enjoyed it. You haven't swayed me yet. I'll stay Nikon until I change my mind, which I may do at any time. Okay, well, thanks, everybody. We can just kind of wave peacefully goodbye now and smile, and Everyone will see you drift off into the digital ether. Okay. Bye, everybody. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.